Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. But I look good. I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Yeah, I still don't really have that impression down. You know, maybe I'll get it by the end of the week. But Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin. Al will be back on Friday. He's dealing with some family issues out in the Big Apple. So it'll be me hosting for today. Got my boy Alec Rio behind the glass. What's up, Alec? How we doing? And then we got my guy Ian Hawley behind the glass as well. So should be a good show for you today, man. MLB trade deadline updates. Looks like ownership for the Washington Nationals has kind of pulled the plug on the Bryce Harper trade or any chance, I should say, of Bryce Harper being traded. You know, kind of looks like that's not going to be happening out in D.C. And your Detroit Tigers have actually just made a trade. So we'll get to that pretty soon. And, you know, a couple other great stories here coming out of the Motor City as well as kind of national news. So Jim Harbaugh making headlines once again for just kind of an interesting quote that surfaced from when Wilton Spate was with the program talking about how chicken poultry is a nervous bird. So very interesting little tidbit there that we'll get into in a little bit, as well as LeBron James opening up his new school. And I got to tell you, man, I'm not really a LeBron fan, never have been. But as a person, it is tough to dislike the guy. It's hard not to respect what he's all about. And I'll share a couple of bits of what his new school has to offer out in Akron and kind of how it differs from other public schools, because it actually is a public school in the Akron School District. So we'll talk about that as well. And then towards the end of the show, Richard Sherman, who's never been shy about sharing his opinion on issues that are important to him, he had some interesting commentary for Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, as have some other players ever since Jones made comments over the weekend regarding the anthem policy and how the Cowboys will adhere to it. So we'll get into that as well towards the end of the show. But you know what's coming up next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. MLB trade deadline. Trades galore last night as we saw the Pittsburgh Pirates trade for Rangers closer Keone Kila. The teams announced earlier today. Left-handed pitcher Taylor Hahn and a player to be named later are going back to Pittsburgh. Kila, who is 25 years old, has pitched with a sub-3.5 ERA and a 3.14 strikeout-to-walk ratio in 36 and two-thirds innings this season. He's also converted on 24 of his 25 save opportunities, 96%, not too shabby. Kila is ineligible for free agency until after the 2021 season, which is obviously an interesting trade, certainly not a rental if he's got a couple years left on his deal, so interesting move there. Also, the market for San Francisco Giants center fielder Andrew McCutchen is growing. Three teams, the New York Yankees, the Philadelphia Phillies, and the Cleveland Indians, have all shown interest in the former MVP. This season, the 31-year-old is batting .253 with 10 home runs, 24 doubles, and 9 stolen bases. McCutcheon's always been one of my favorite players, folks. He's had some health issues, certainly, but it'd be cool to see him get traded to a contender. The Detroit Tigers have also traded center fielder Leonis Martin. This broke, I'd say, about 20 minutes ago when John Morosi tweeted it. Traded Leonis Martin in the division to the Cleveland Indians in exchange for shortstop prospect Willie Castro. Kyle Doughty is also headed to Cleveland in that deal. Speaking of the Detroit Tigers, the Old English D start the first of their two-game miniseries as they take on the last place in the NL Central Cincinnati Reds. Matthew Boyd, who has a 5-9 record, will get the nod to start against Reds pitcher Homer Bailey. The action kicks off at 7:10 p.m. at Comerica Park, and you can catch the game on Fox Sports Detroit. You know, it seemed like just a couple weeks ago Matthew Boyd was a hot commodity, hot name in the trade discussions, but looks like he'll be staying in the Old English D for the foreseeable future. The Lansing Lugnuts topped the Dayton Dragons 8-3 yesterday. The Class AA minor league team affiliate of the Toronto Blue Jays went absolutely lugnuts last night as they cruised to a victory over the Dragons. The Luggies plated 6 runs in the 6th inning to support 6 scoreless innings from Maximo Castillo. Chavez Young grounded an RBI single to right field for a 1-0 lead. Ryan Noda greeted the incoming Dari Moreta with a 2-run single to make it 3-0. Brandon Grudzelinic supplied a 2nd single, and Chad Spanberger drove in both Noda and Grudzelinic with a triple down the right field line. Norberto Obeso cashed in Spanberger with a sacrifice fly, capping the rally with the Lugnuts ahead 6-0. Miguel Cervantes, a Broadway and screen actor who stars as Alexander Hamilton in the Chicago production of Hamilton, is bringing his pipes and his arm to Fifth Third Ballpark and a West Michigan Whitecaps game. The actor will throw out a ceremonial first pitch, perform the national anthem, and sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game for the 7th inning stretch for the August 6th game. We're excited to welcome Miguel, Whitecaps promotions manager Matt Hoffman said. It's a rare opportunity to have a person of Miguel's stature perform for us. Cervantes has had the starring role in Lin-Manuel Miranda's musical about the Founding Fathers since the show's debut in October of 2016. All right, Michigan's Jim Harbaugh doesn't think his players should be eating chicken, but not for any reason you've ever heard before. A feature on Michigan quarterback Shea Patterson from Bleacher Report's Matt Hayes contains the story, as told by former Michigan quarterback Wilton Spate. As you would note, Wilton Spate was the starting quarterback for the Michigan Wolverines during the 2016 season, in which they won 10 games en route to an Orange Bowl appearance against the Florida State Seminoles, and he was the starting quarterback at the beginning of the 2017 season before being knocked out with a neck injury. Early in his Michigan tenure, Harbaugh pulled Spate aside and told him not to eat chicken, a protein that is considered fairly safe by nutritionists, Hayes wrote. When Spate asked why, Harbaugh said, "Because it's a nervous bird." The fowl's anxiety isn't Harbaugh's only gripe with chicken, though. He thinks some type of sickness injected its way into the human population when people began eating white meats instead of beef and pork, Spate, now at UCLA, told Bleacher Report, and he believes it 100%. Alec Rio, behind the glass, you got any thoughts on Jim Harbaugh stating that chicken is a nervous bird?
I do have to say, you know, I know a lot of people have, like, their superstitions when it comes to performance and a lot of stuff. You know, Wayne Gretzky, I remember he had a superstition where he would drink, like, Diet Coke water during each intermission, and, like, how players tape their sticks a certain way.
Sure.
And I know maybe to a certain extent it might be superstition, but I think a lot of this is backed up by, like, something that he actually thinks, like, is poisoning humanity, which is a very interesting take, to say the least, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know what? To each their own, and more power to Jim Harbaugh. Speaking of the University of Michigan, quarterback Shea Patterson entered the locker room of the Texas Rangers AAA team last week, and based on his Instagram, his baseball cohorts are quite the jokers. Patterson was recently drafted in the 39th round of the MLB draft by the Texas Rangers. A video from his social media account showed his number 2 Rangers jersey hanging in the locker, along with a number of copies of the Ohio State logo and images of Brutus Buckeye. Patterson, who transferred to Michigan from Ole Miss in December and will be competing for the starting quarterback job at the U of M when camp opens, was drafted by the Rangers, as I mentioned, in the 39th round of the MLB draft last month. He was drafted as a third baseman but has not played organized baseball since his junior year of high school. He was signed to a six-year contract, but he will be focused on Michigan during his 2 years of eligibility. Very interesting, sort of like Kyler Murray at OU, Oklahoma University, the quarterback there, getting an offer to play in the MLB as well, but focused on football for the foreseeable future. I also don't think Shea Patterson plans on playing baseball professionally at any point. The Rangers last week assigned him to Round Rock, Texas to work with the AAA team. He took batting practice and will participate in other activities, according to a story in the Austin American-Statesman. Richard Sherman, stating that Jerry Jones has a plantation mentality. Richard Sherman is not a man known for biting his tongue. The San Francisco 49ers cornerback lived up to his reputation Monday in an interview with USA Today, where he blasted Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones over his stance on the NFL's national anthem policy. "The owner of the Dallas Cowboys with the old plantation mentality," Sherman said. "What did you expect?" The NFL reportedly recently told Jones to keep quiet over his repeated mention of the policy and insistence that Cowboys players must stand for the anthem, toe on the line. Jones' statement came last week after the NFL had announced it was suspending its policy regarding players on the field to stand at attention during the anthem while engaged in discussions with the NFL Players Association on how to resolve the divisive issue. Folks, we'll get into this topic near the end of the show. I certainly have thoughts on it. I'd love to hear what my PA Alec Rio has to say as well. And, you know, it's certainly an interesting topic, and Richard Sherman's never been a guy who shied away from voicing his opinion on issues. So, you know, we'll dive into that. LeBron James stated that President Donald Trump uses sports to divide us. James had an exclusive interview yesterday with CNN's Don Lemon, where he discussed the current racial divide in the country, his new school, and the ways in which he uses his large platform to get the things he wants to get across. He also brings up how the president is using sports as a medium to divide the country by race. "Sports was the first time I was ever around someone white," revealed the four-time NBA MVP. "I got an opportunity to see them and learn about them, and they got an opportunity to learn about me. And I was like, oh, wow, this is all because of sports." A lot of news regarding LeBron James coming these past couple days, and we'll certainly get into him opening his new school and, you know, kind of how it'll differ from other public schools and the amount of work he's doing in Akron, Ohio, with third and fourth graders and at-risk kids in general. So those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, please call us at 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. Share what's on your mind. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. We are currently live streaming the show. That's all we got for our quick hit headlines. Alec, let's keep it pushing. Welcome in on a Tuesday. Al Martin will be back in studio Friday. Jack Kerwin filling in for him between now and then. Alec Rio behind the glass, along with our producer emeritus, Ian Hawley. Alec, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I can't complain at all. It's a beautiful day out, you know?
Awesome. You excited to learn from the hand of the great Ian Hawley himself?
I honestly can't ask for a better former engineer to help me out on this. I got Ian right here. You want to talk, Ian?
Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm glad that I could stay this week with you guys and kind of help you along in your journey here to become the ultimate show host. Seems Jack is well on his way, and Alec is on his way to being the next engineer extraordinaire here at
Current Sports. Yeah, man, Al Martin better watch out, right? No one can replace the great Al Martin. So let's get into this whole trade deadline discussion. Let's start first with the news that broke, I'd say, about 20 minutes ago regarding the Detroit Tigers. Leonis Martin, center fielder for the Tigers, has been traded in the division to the Cleveland Indians for shortstop prospect Willie Castro. Deal was first reported by The Athletic, it appears, and You know, Leonis Martin certainly filled a role for the Tigers this season. You know, Mikey Matuk certainly struggled to start the year and found his way down in AAA after being a surprisingly good contributor for the Tigers last year. And Martin had been seeing a lot of action in center field, and he hit 250 for the Tigers with 9 home runs and 7 stolen bases. And he'd been injured twice this season because of hamstring injuries. And I'm looking right now to see what I can find on Willie Castro. I don't know a ton about him. He's a shortstop. You know, they've acquired several infielders in general with recent deals, you know, guys like Isaac Paredes and Dowell Lugo, the main headliner of the J.D. Martinez deal last year. So Al Avila is certainly kind of giving the impression that he's not content right now with the personnel we have, the Tigers, excuse me, have that he has in the middle infield, you know, with guys like Jose Iglesias and Nico Goodrum's shouldered a good portion of the load at second base as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that position group kind of grows in these next couple of years as the Tigers head further down the road of their rebuild. Perhaps the biggest national story, I'd say, right now is whether or not we'll see Bryce Harper get moved before the 4 p.m. deadline. And if Harper is to get moved, would that signify that, you know, his time in Washington is over? And where do you think he'd go from there? Do you think he'd, you know, if he were to get traded to a contender like the New York Yankees, do you think he'd re-up with them, or do you think he'd test the waters in free agency? So I certainly would love to hear your thoughts on MLB free agency, and also if you have any thoughts on the Tigers trade for Willie Castro, we'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. If you want to tweet the show, it is at WKAR_sports, or if you want to tweet me directly, Jack Kerwin, it is at jkerlose, J-K-I-R-L-O-S-E on Twitter. So you can hit us up any number of ways, and we'd love to hear from you. As far as, I guess I'll start it this way. As far as Bryce Harper is concerned, it doesn't appear as though he's going to be traded. You know, it kind of seems as though ownership pulled the plug late last night, because I guess they're only about 5.5 games out right now as it stands in their division, and it looks like, you know, certainly when you anytime you move a superstar of Bryce Harper's caliber, you run the risk of alienating a lot of fans, certainly. And I guess you'd run the risk of, you know, also pulling the plug on a season in which you have, you know, a generational player like Bryce Harper. So, you know, I'd be surprised at this point to see him get moved on, but we'll continue to update you if anything surfaces in the next hour. According to John Hyman, rivals in the division continue to believe that Bryce Harper is a long shot to be traded. Nats are only 5.5 games out, as I just mentioned. Also, they wouldn't get Hall as a rental. The Orioles did well getting 4 prospects for Manny Machado, but market is better for a shortstop or third baseman, and Manny was hitting 100 points higher. As Bryce Harper's kind of struggled at the plate from a pure hitting standpoint, he's only hit about 220 this year, but his OPS is well over 800, so still hitting for power, just not reaching base with the consistency that some teams would probably like to see, just, you know, if they were to trade several notable prospects to acquire Harper. So we'll keep you updated. Doesn't look like, as of right now, we'll see Harper get moved, but you never know, you know? You certainly never know. And I certainly didn't expect to see Leonis Martin get traded from the Detroit Tigers, but good move for them to bring in Willie Castro and, you know, kind of, I guess, just add more prospects to the pool at this point. That's kind of where I'm at with the Tigers. I haven't paid much attention this year just because, you know, Al Avila has been very clear that, you know, this is a rebuild right now, and he understands that fans may lose interest in the immediate future, but he's doing what he thinks is the best interest for the team, and I certainly respect that, but, you know, I'm not going to be tuning in on a game-to-game basis. Alec Rio, you have any thoughts on the Leonis Martin deal?
Yes, I do. I actually do like Willie Castro a lot. He's a switch-hitting shortstop currently at AA Akron. Currently, he has a .245 batting average and has 13 stolen bases over 97 games this season. And the Tigers, they've been looking to develop infield position players, so this acquisition makes total sense because he's a young stud who is a defensive star for his Double-A team. And in spite of, like, he had a couple unimpressive offensive numbers this season, there's a lot to be excited about, just mainly because of his speed. It seems like a good return, especially because we got another pitcher for Leonis Martin. I can't find it right now, but
I think you're thinking of Kyle Doughty, but we traded him from to the Cleveland Indians. I'm not seeing here that we acquired another pitcher.
I guess not then. Okay.
I mean, you might have seen something that I missed.
I might have seen something. That might have been like before it was official. But for right now, that's all I see for Willie Castro. I'm seeing a lot of good reviews from scouts saying that they have a lot to be excited about for Willie Castro.
Yeah, and you know what? I agree with you. You know, looking up on the Twitterverses right now, Anthony Fennec covers the Detroit Tigers, said that one rival evaluator who is familiar with Willie Castro, he's a legitimate prospect. And like I said, a top 10 prospect in the Cleveland Indians organization. So, you know, hopefully it works out well for the Tigers. John Heyman also said, fine shortstop prospect. So, you know, Tigers fans can certainly hope that Al Avila knows what he's doing. I highlighted yesterday a little bit that I like a lot of the moves that Avila's made since taking over for Dave Dombrowski. You know, certainly in terms of acquiring depth for the farm system with guys like Isaac Paredes and Jake Rogers and Daz Cameron and Franklin Perez, who was also just shut down for the season I saw earlier today. You know, he was the crown jewel of the Justin Verlander trade. But in general, I like what I've seen from Al Avila, and you know, I'll kind of leave it at that. I think he's earned the benefit of the doubt somewhat in my mind. And, you know, surprising signings like Nico Goodrum, who's been a good contributor so far for the Tigers. So, you know, I'm willing to roll with it. You know, I think any Tiger fan that's kind of upset right now with, you know, a guy who played a big role as the center fielder, started a lot of games this season for the Tigers, upset to see him moving out, I think should just consider the process going down and perhaps, you know, cut some slack to Al Avila and consider what he's done so far, because I think he's made some good moves, and, you know, we'll see what happens here with this Willie Castro deal. But, you know, for now, that's kind of where we're at. And Alec Rio, do you have any other thoughts on how Al Avila's done as a whole as general manager of the Detroit Tigers?
I like where he's taking it. I'm glad we fired our past coach, to be honest. I'm also glad that we've made a couple moves in the offseason to let the fans know that we're rebuilding and that he's making it known, kind of different to what Ken Holland is doing with the Red Wings. Like it took him forever for him to say, oh yeah, we're finally in the rebuild now. But yeah, I'm glad that he's gone right to it to go into the rebuild mode.
Sure, certainly. And you know what? I would agree with that. I think the Tigers were fairly proactive when it came to starting their rebuild because, you know, with guys like Miguel Cabrera and Justin Verlander, even though they're a little past their prime, it's hard to pull the plug. And, you know, moving out JV at the second trade deadline last year was a very painful move, I think, for a lot of Tigers fans. But in hindsight, it was probably something that needed to be done. So, looks like I've pulled up something else on Willie Castro from about a year ago. From a prospect report from Cleveland, from a prospect evaluator named Jason Waddell. And Waddell said that Castro in his first in high A last season slashed .289 with a .337 on base percentage and a .422 slugging percentage in high A ball. While the average may be a bit of an anomaly and not part of his overall game, he has the ability to barrel the ball and do damage. He had 10 home runs and 17 stolen bases and was on pace for another 20 stolen base season at the time of this report. Like most young hitters, Castro was impatient and likes to swing the bat, which could lead to prolonged slumps against better pitching, but that's certainly something that can be worked out in minor league ball by the time he comes up to the MLB. You know, maybe not an issue we'll have to worry about too much. When I say we, I mean, you know, fans in general. And, you know, that's pretty commonplace amongst young players, I'd say. And he's walked in 5.6% of his at-bats while striking out 18.7% of the time. More importantly, he has shown the ability to get better as he matures. And I think that's an important takeaway just because, you know, as players develop, heading up through, you know, high A ball to double A to triple A all the way to the majors, you know, certain things that may have worked in lower levels aren't going to work in higher levels. So to see him improve is probably a good thing. And, you know, we'll see if anything else surfaces on the trade front for the Detroit Tigers before the 4 p.m. deadline. I certainly am not expecting anything else to get done with the exception of maybe a Francisco Liriano trade, but you never know. I didn't expect to see Leonis Martin get dealt, but from the looks of it, this is a good deal, and, you know, not anything I can complain too much about, so we'll see what else Al Avila has up his sleeve. When we get back, what I want to do first off is I want to take our first break here. And when we get back, we will discuss Jim Harbaugh's statements about eating chicken and how it is a nervous bird. So I'll certainly get Alex's opinion on that as well as offering my own opinion. So we'll be right back. This is Current Sports this is WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Jack Kerwin. All right, welcome back. Jack Kerwin here, filling in for Al Martin. Al will be back Friday, but for now it'll be me in studio, Alec Rio behind the glass, Ian Hawley back there as well. And shifting gears here, you know, we just finished up our discussion regarding the Detroit Tigers, and if you have thoughts on them, please get them in. We'd love to hear from you at 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. Well, let's shift gears here to Jim Harbaugh making headlines again for, you know, kind of an interesting reason, I'd say. Jim Harbaugh's reason for the reason he does not want his players to eat chicken, he says it's a nervous bird. This story came from Wilton Spate, and I'll read you his quotes. We read them during the headliners, but we'll address them again. Harbaugh thinks some type of sickness injected its way into the human population when people began eating white meats instead of beef and pork, Spate told Bleacher Report, and he believes it 100%. He also says that statements like these are just part of the Harbaugh experience. And, you know, certainly we've always known that Jim Harbaugh is an interesting character, to say the least, ever since, you know, recruiting visits, taking sleepovers to hang out with Quinn Nordine, his current kicker, and, you know, climbing trees to try to lure recruits. And, you know, whether it was last year, the week of the MSU game, jumping off a 3-meter diving board with his clothes on, you know, bizarre is a way to describe Jim Harbaugh, to say the least. You know, he's an interesting character. But I don't think this is necessarily a huge deal. I mean, I think it's kind of a funny story, and maybe at this point we shouldn't be surprised with anything that Jim Harbaugh has to say. But, you know, I don't think this is any cause for, you know, controversy or anything that, you know, should lead people to kind of criticize his track record ever since getting to Michigan. Because I know a lot of people certainly, when he made the statement about, what was it, about a week and a half ago at Big Ten Media Day, probably more like a week ago at Big Ten Media Day, when he said he wanted the college football playoff to be expanded from 4 teams eventually to 8 until 16 and eliminate the conference championship games. You know, a lot of people kind of pointed out that this actually wouldn't have much of an effect on his program, and that, you know, a move like this would, seems like it would just kind of make things more convenient for a guy who struggled to get to the college football playoff in his first 3 years. But for me, I think the whole nervous bird thing is just kind of a funny story, to be honest with you. I don't have any huge opinion on it, but Alec Rio, what are your thoughts on Jim Harbaugh saying that chicken is a nervous bird?
Well, to be honest, you know, since it's a football team and most of the players are huge, you know, and after you work out, you want to take in as much protein as you can.
Sure.
Chicken is a good source of protein. And for him to completely diss it and say that it's causing people to be sick or it's,
right,
you know, not, or it's detrimental for someone's muscle growth, to me, that's just really ironic, because that's like one of the main sources of protein you can get, sure, besides like peanuts or like almond milk or something like that. Like if you're trying to grow, then chicken is the way to go, or other kinds of meats, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. And you know what? He's always kind of had an affinity for steak, as we know. You know, he talked about a couple years ago, someone asked Jim Harbaugh if he took vitamins every day when he woke up. He said, "I eat a vitamin every day. It's called a steak." So I guess that's his way of getting protein. And Spate said that Harbaugh wants his guys to focus on darker proteins like steak and and pork and things of that nature. So, you know, that's kind of funny to me. I've always thought Jim Harbaugh's food thoughts, you know, if you want to call them those, with regards to, you know, talking about eating steak and, you know, he wants young players to drink as much milk as their little bellies can hold, I think has always been just kind of funny. I think it's actually very hilarious, and I'm a big milk fan myself, so I can't be too mad at him for that. But I just think this is a hilarious story and probably getting blown out of proportion, just the amount of coverage I've seen of Jim Harbaugh saying players shouldn't eat chicken, I think is probably a little much for me, but, you know, it is what it is. So let's shift gears here real quick. You know, to LeBron James, who has made some headlines this offseason, obviously. You know, now he's playing out in L.A. for the Los Angeles Lakers after concluding a four-year stint, his second of which with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And he just opened a public school in Akron, Ohio, his hometown, for at-risk kids. It's called the I Promise School, and it'll start this Monday. I have a bite for you. Do we have the bite there, Alec? I have a bite on Zeta right now for the LeBron James, kind of the speech he gave when he opened the school. Do you have it with you? Yeah, let's hear from LeBron James talking about, just talking about what he can do for inner city youth and kind of the way he can help out with, you know, how much success he's had in his career. So take a listen.
I just want people to know, this is for the adults, that it doesn't matter, you know, as a kid growing up in the inner city, and me specifically growing up here in Akron, Ohio, you know, being underprivileged and feeling that you could become a statistic, by me being able to put something like this together, I want people to know that these kids should still have the same opportunity as everyone else. And that's what's most important. So as us as the adults, you can guys clap it up if you want to. So us as the adults, we have a responsibility to not let these kids down, to continue to be the teachers, the mentors, the parents, the coaches, the life studies, the life skills, whatever it is, the inspiration, the superheroes, everything, that's our responsibility, because these kids are our future, and they have dreams that's bigger and greater than the city of Akron, than the state of Ohio, than the United States of America. So in closing, thank you so much. I love you too, man. I really do. And no matter if I'm playing in Los Angeles or not, Akron, Ohio is always home for me.
Akron, Ohio is always home for me. Great stuff from LeBron James there. So what I want to do now is SB Nation wrote a really interesting piece about the public school that LeBron has just opened. And I want to kind of read off to you some of the ways this school differs from other public schools. The school will operate with a longer than normal school year with a focus on accelerated learning to bring kids up to speed who otherwise might be lagging. In addition, there is a focus on combating factors outside of the classroom that could cause children to struggle. Services are available to help students deal from stress-related issues to parents who are struggling to make ends meet. In addition, there are activities to prevent the kids from having too much idle time and potentially getting into trouble. The school also provides services to families, which include job placement, assistance for parents, and an on-site food bank that will allow parents to pick out foods they can prepare at home. LeBron James often credits his bicycle as a huge factor in his childhood that gave him an escape from dangerous parts of his neighborhood and the freedom to explore. Every student will receive a bicycle when they arrive. Principal Brandy Davis explained the goals of the I Promise School to the Los Angeles Times. Davis said, "I think the missing link in public education is that family wraparound support. Because our students come to school and they're worried about things at home, we want to create that safe, that secure, and that caring and loving environment for our families and our students so that our kids can focus on education." Wow. You know what? For the life of me, I can't think of any story like this ever. I can't think of any athlete, you know, putting forth this much time and effort to help at-risk students. You know, we've seen something kind of similar in the city of Detroit with Jalen Rose opening the Jalen Rose Leadership Academy. But the idea that LeBron James is going to have, you know, a food bank for parents of at-risk kids to pick out foods that they can prepare for their families, and every student's going to get a free bike. It's, I mean, this is just great stuff from, you know, a cultural icon and sports legend in LeBron James. You know, one thing that I also think stands out to me, as far as I know right now, it looks like the school is for third and fourth graders, I believe only. But, you know, it's interesting that, you know, LeBron did a couple of years ago, he paid for about 1,000 kids to go to college. And, you know, he's done a lot with education. He also had what looks like the Wheels for Education program, which he started in 2011, which gives kids school supplies and access to computers and also a bicycle inside a system designed to keep kids motivated to complete their homework and get good grades. So, you know, education is obviously very important to LeBron, and LeBron certainly wants to help as many at-risk youth as possible and, you know, kind of give opportunities to kids that might struggle to find opportunities, you know, with their personal situation. So I think all of this is great. From a selfish standpoint, I don't appreciate that LeBron James is making it a little tougher for me to dislike him. I've never been a fan of LeBron James on the court, but I mean, from an off the court standpoint, he's always been a class act. He's never had any type of, real problem of any sort off the court, you know, never had any issues with domestic violence or troubles with the law or anything like that. So, you know, great stuff from a guy like LeBron James. And, you know, when you think about it, LeBron is really one of the best role models I think any athlete could be. So I think that's all great. Alec, do you have any thoughts on LeBron James opening up a school for at-risk youth in Akron, Ohio?
I think this is definitely an unprecedented thing that any athlete has done for their community.
I agree.
I also think I saw the interview with Don Lemon earlier today on CNN, and he talked about how in fourth grade he had about 83 absences from school. And then he said he got a couple role models in his life, and that changed him, because in fifth grade the next year he didn't miss a single day of class. And it made me think, LeBron James easily could have been another one of those kids who got lost in the system, who just decided that they didn't want to care about school or they didn't want to do anything, but he found the role models at the right time. And I believe that this is what LeBron James wants to do for all these at-risk kids by opening the school, because he wants to be that person to push them to strive for great success, and they want to push the families to do better, like to raise their kids and be an actual part in their lives. And to me, this is just absolutely unbelievable, and I can't even begin to describe how much respect I have for LeBron James for doing this, because he knew that when he was younger, he didn't have any of these role models, and instead of trying to continue the cycle of not being a role model just because of simply he didn't have that many role models until around the fourth grade, now he wants to be that person and to make a difference in his society and all around on the court too. And I can't help but admire that.
Great stuff, Alec. Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, anyone who's out there is kind of wondering about what this school, it's called the I Promise School, what this school looks like from the inside. You can find it all over Twitter. There are some really great pictures, some really cool stuff here. The school lobby contains 114 game-worn shoes that people have bought. Also seeing a tweet from Common showing a video of a young kid walking into the school for the first time and understanding that it's going to be the place where he's going to get to go and learn and, you know, have role models for the next at least a year. So really awesome stuff from LeBron James. He's got inspirational quotes at the top of the lobby as well. I promise I will work hard. I will never give up. I will do my best. I will never miss school, it looks like. And, you know, I was watching a tweet earlier today, and, you know, he's kind of prepared an I Promise speech for all the students to recite at the beginning of each day. So, you know, really great stuff from LeBron James. And, you know, if you have thoughts on this, please, I'd love to hear from you. If you can think of any parallels that, you know, we've seen in the past with sports athletes, I'd love to hear from you on those as well. So the phone number is 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. What I want to do now is let's take our second break here. When we come back, we got a very interesting topic regarding the national anthem policies and Richard Sherman voicing his opinion on Jerry Jones's comments from the weekend, talking about how players for the Dallas Cowboys will all stand for the national anthem with their toe on the line. So what I want to do here is we'll hit our first break, and when we come back, I'll kind of give my opinion on that. I'll open the floor up for Alec and Ian to voice their thoughts as well. And if you have thoughts, please call in. We'd love to hear from you. This is WKAR's Current Sports. I am Jack Kerwin. All right, welcome back. Jack Kerwin here in Studio S on the campus of Michigan State University, filling in for Al Martin. Al will be back Friday. So what I want to do now is I kind of want to shift gears here to Richard Sherman's thoughts on Jerry Jones's comments on the new national anthem policy. So let me set the stage for you first off. Jerry Jones, over the weekend, stated that, you know, Dallas Cowboy players will all stand for the national anthem, toe on the line. They will not, no Cowboy players will be permitted to wait in the locker room as permitted by the current national anthem policy in the National Football League. The NFL policy right now states that all team and league personnel on the field shall stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. Personnel who choose not to stand for the anthem may stay in the locker room or in a similar location off the field until after the anthem has been performed. A club will be fined by the league if its personnel are on the field and do not stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. Each club may develop its own work rules consistent with the above principles regarding its personnel who do not stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. The commissioner will impose appropriate discipline on league personnel who do not stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. So that's the policy as it stands right now. It's currently being renegotiated by the NFL and the NFL Players Association. But Richard Sherman had some interesting comments, and he was not the only person that commented on Jerry Jones's remarks, but, you know, he was certainly the most outspoken, and I would argue he kind of took it to another level. So let me preface this by saying I am not a fan of Jerry Jones in any way, shape, or form. I am not a fan of the new national anthem policy. I am not a fan in general of the way the NFL has handled the anthem protests. With that being said, let me read off to you the quotes from Richard Sherman. "The owner of the Dallas Cowboys with the old plantation mentality," Sherman told USA Today. "What did you expect?" For me, I don't know where Alex stands on this. I don't know where Ian stands on this. I certainly think it's fair to criticize Jerry Jones when it comes to, you know, his comments saying that our policy is for you to stand during the anthem toe on the line. And, you know, Malcolm Jenkins did that as well, calling Jerry Jones a bully. And I certainly think that that's a fair criticism. But from my end, I just think that Richard Sherman's taken it a little too far with the old plantation mentality quote. I think it's certainly fair to criticize Jerry Jones, but I just do not think bringing up that historical context is really fair when discussing pro sports and the fact that Jerry Jones, you know, again, I don't care for Jerry Jones, but certainly players on the Dallas Cowboys make a lot of money. And to draw that comparison with the old plantation mentality is just a little too much for me. Alec, what are your thoughts on the issue?
Okay, so Jerry Jones is a white man in America, and he has never had to deal with any kind of racial injustice when it comes to oppression,
okay,
in terms of, like, in the system and just in society overall. So, to be honest, whenever I hear these opinions from NFL owners and stuff, I just think that they do not know what it's like to be an African-American male in this day and age in society. And to me, I really don't agree, or I don't disagree with what Richard Sherman has to say, because when it comes to these protests, it has nothing to do with the national anthem. It's more so combating the gun violence that has plagued this country for so long, and they're just standing up for what they believe is targeting on African American men and other demographics of men. And to me, whenever I hear an owner say something like this, like to say, just shut up and do your job, or when I hear like Fox analysts saying, just shut up and dribble when it comes to LeBron James, to me, it's just the other side not even willing to look at the other argument. Like, it's just Jerry Jones just does not want to see the other side of the argument by forcing players to stand for the national anthem. And when it comes to that, when you see that players are kneeling for the national anthem, instead of being outraged on why they're doing it, think about why they're doing it.
Sure.
Like, wouldn't you want a country, a beautiful country, where everyone would love to stand instead of forcing people to stand? Because when you're forcing people to stand, that's just basically, it's just basically not allowing someone to voice, hey, I don't like something about this country. I want to do my best to change it to better this country. It's not more so like the people who are trying to change the country are like, oh, I can't stand this country, like blah, 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 like, and just trashing the country. It's, I see places to improve in this country, and I want to make it better by doing this and this. And to me, those people who don't bother to listen to that side is the reason why things are still the way they are instead of actually making progress.
Sure, and I understand where you're coming from, and I think a lot of what you said is fair, but do you think it's fair for Richard Sherman to bring up, you know, a plantation mentality and make references to slavery as it pertains to, you know, national anthem protests? That's the part where it just loses me a little bit. Where are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I can see the parallels when it comes to that, because it basically is just, it's making the Cowboys make it seem like it is a plantation, because Jerry Jones is making all these rules and saying, hey, players, you can't speak up for what you want to believe in. And I see Dak Prescott and Zeke, when they're talking about the national anthem, I could see their expressions that they didn't fully believe what they were saying when it came to that they were totally fine with the Jerry Jones anthem policy. I could see in their facial expressions and their mannerisms that they weren't all okay with that. And to me, when I see players being silenced and I see players not being able to speak for what they believe in, I just don't see how any type of chemistry can build between the owners and the players.
All right, interesting thought. I'm not sure I agree with you fully on the plantation mentality stuff, but, you know, I respect your opinion, certainly. Ian Hawley joining us in studio. Ian, how are we doing today?
Doing all right. I'm happy to be here. Had a little bit of a late start this morning. I apologize for being here late.
No worries.
I didn't hear my alarm, but I'm glad to be here with you. And my thoughts on this issue, I really have not had a lot of respect for the Dallas Cowboys organization as a whole ever since I, you know, really started paying attention to the off-the-field issues that their organization has had over the years.
Sure.
2017 was actually the fourth year in a row that they had a defensive player suspended on that side of the ball for some kind of off-the-field violation. So it's clear to me that as far as the Dallas Cowboys organization goes, they don't really care what their players do off the field. And they'll start players like Greg Hardy or Orlando Scandrick, you know, who have had, you know, domestic violence issues or drug abuse issues. In Scandrick's case, it was just a one-time thing at a party where he took a recreational drug, but he still got suspended for it.
Sure.
So when it comes to players, you know, abusing their own bodies or, you know, taking drugs or, you know, hurting their spouses, the Dallas Cowboys don't seem to care much about that. They want to win football games. But, you know, the second that we have an issue that affects Jerry Jones and affects his money, then that's when he steps in and puts his foot down.
Absolutely.
Not to play on the toe on the line thing, but, you know, it's despicable to me when you see the owner of the organization like that so clearly only invested in his own money and his own gain. You know, the NFL has a deal with the military to promote, they wear... camo uniforms for some games.
Right.
They have the ribbons on their chests, supporting the military. So I don't think this would necessarily be as big of a deal as it is had the NFL not signed that contract with the military.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I'm sure you know, the military and former members of the armed forces are kind of the ones that spurred this on social media to the point where the protest is today. And as I've said before, it's ironic that the owners of the NFL and the commissioner are so heavily against this and so verbally against this, so outspoken about it, because I think it's just a byproduct of media. But, you know, after you talk about something long enough in the media and there's no new developments, then the story kind of subsides.
Right.
If the owners had done that with this protest – then the protest wouldn't be nearly as big as it is right now. Not so many players would be involved. It would have been Colin Kaepernick and a few other players across the league who had felt strongly enough to either sit or kneel. But we wouldn't be at this point in our national media where this was so big. And again, the same can be said for our president, Donald Trump, who has constantly tweeted his disapproval of NFL players taking a knee. Yep. So ironically, if those owners and our president had not verbalized their opinion so strongly, then it wouldn't have garnered the same support. The protest wouldn't have garnered the same support that it has now. And it might actually be in the background now. But here we are. We're still talking about this. The NFL still can't seem to get their story straight on where they want to go with this policy, in large part because of protests from the NFL players and the Players Association. So if the owners keep enforcing it to this degree and with such of a black and white mentality, in terms of standing and not standing, not in terms of race, but in just this is the rule. Yeah, that's okay. Where we're going with this. That's what I meant by black and white. If they keep trying to push it like this, then players will just keep speaking out. I mean, you've already seen multiple players across the NFL say they're just going to take their fines and keep protesting. Because they got it like that. They make money like that. And they don't really care if it'll raise the awareness that they want to raise. So, again, Jerry Jones is really just hurting himself here and hurting his pocket by continuing to pursue this. But it doesn't surprise me because, again, the only thing Jerry Jones cares about is Jerry Jones and his money. So he's not going to let anyone mess with that.
Yeah, let me ask you this, though. I mean, I certainly agree with you. And like I said, I'm not a fan of Jerry Jones in general, you know. And I think it's certainly fair, Malcolm Jenkins' reference calling him a bully the other day. I think it was either this morning or yesterday. Mm-hmm. But do you think it's fair for Richard Sherman to bring up, you know, references to slavery and saying that Jerry Jones has an old plantation mentality? Just to me, I think that's a little too much. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's definitely kind of out there from Richard Sherman. But, I mean, this issue is about civil rights, you know, and that relates directly back to slavery. You know, Richard Sherman feels that because the NFL is majority African-American or black players, that they should have a strong say in, you know, kind of the voice of the league and the outlook of the league as it relates to the general public. But Jerry Jones is, you know, trying to crack the whip, for lack of a better expression, and make sure that his players stay silent. So I can see where Richard Sherman might, you know, make that comparison. Because you know, you have a white owner of a team, and all of the, or not all, but you know, 80% of the players on the Dallas Cowboys are black. So, you know, if the Dallas Cowboys African American players collectively were to decide to sit out the season or something ridiculous like that, then that would really hurt Jerry Jones. But I don't think they're going to take that chance with their money. Because knowing Jerry Jones, he'd just cut all of them, and then we'd have, you know, 30 kickers and 30 quarterbacks on the Dallas Cowboys for the upcoming season.
Very interesting.
That would be very interesting. but I don't think it's unreasonable for Richard Sherman to make that comparison, and I think that it was inflammatory on purpose because he wanted people to notice what he was saying.
Sure, and you know what? I agree with that. I guess, you know what? I guess just the rift between me and you guys is just, to me, I think when players are making six figures and in most cases, seven figures, I think it's a little too much to bring references to slavery to the forefront. But you know what? I see where you're coming from. And I certainly think criticism of Jerry Jones is fair. Mm-hmm. You know, just for me, I guess it's just a little bit sensationalized.
It's over the top for sure.
Yeah.
It's over the top.
Yeah. But that's just where I'm at.
He's trying to make a strong comparison to make his case known. So I really don't have a problem with that in that respect. And again, Richard Sherman's an African-American player. So if he wants to make that comparison, he has every right, you know?
Yeah, certainly. And as I stated earlier, the rule right now is actually, it's on hold between the league and the NFL Players Association. So, you know, we'll kind of see what happens. But, you know, for now, it's the way it is. And there's a lot of time between now and the season, you know, about a month. So it'll be interesting to see if the policy gets changed. But thanks, Ian. I really appreciate your input.
Thank you.
All right. Well, got about 5 minutes left in the show here. You have thoughts, get them in, 517-355-9527. That's 517-355-WKAR. If you have thoughts on anything we've discussed today, these last few minutes, we'd love to hear from you. And you know what? I guess just summing up what Ian and Alex said, I certainly respect the rights of players to stand up for what they believe in. You know what? I'll put it this way. I've never been a stick-to-sports guy. I've always thought that's kind of a tired bit, and it's something that You know, you'd never tell anyone of any other profession to, you know, stick to their job. You'd never tell a guy to stick to business or stick to plumbing. So to me, the whole stick to sports shtick has always worn thin. And I certainly respect, you know, athletes standing up for what they believe in. Just from my point of view, as it pertains to Richard Sherman, you know, Sherm's always been a guy who's outspoken about, you know, issues off the field as well as on the field. Just from where I'm coming from, I think making references to slavery is just a little bit too much as it pertains to Jerry Jones, simply because, you know, no one's forcing you to play for the Dallas Cowboys or to play in the NFL in general. And again, I certainly respect the opinion of people who want to say that Jerry Jones is a bully the way Malcolm Jenkins did. But for me, calling Jerry Jones, you know, saying that Jerry Jones has an old plantation mentality, attributing those motives to him is just a little bit hyperbolic, I suppose, in my eyes. But, you know, certainly Ian and Alec have their opinions as well. And, you know, I think they both made valid points. So, you know, I guess we'll agree to disagree on that one. And, you know, we'll see what the new anthem policy kind of comes to. Alec, do you have any, I guess, suggestions on what the NFL could do to kind of revise the policy?
Honestly, to this point, there won't be anything that won't cause any controversy.
I agree.
Because right now we're dealing with a bunch of fans who really do think that athletes should stick to sports and strictly sports and just say, hey, just shut up. We want you to entertain us. And so what I think what they should do for like this revision is I don't think that there should be any penalties or fines for players who are just simply sticking up for what they believe in and talking about the problems in society that is targeting that certain demographic of people who make up a majority of that league. And so I don't think any penalties or fines should come about if they decide to protest, because just imagine where our country would be had we have never protested anything, had we been too scared to protest, like just completely decided not to do anything about it and just roll with it. Like, we would not be anywhere close to the progress of where America has gotten had we have not protested.
I agree. Good stuff, Alec. You know what? Looks like we're just about out of time for today. So we are on a 23-hour break. We'll catch you back tomorrow at 1 p.m. Again, I'll probably be hosting then as well. Al will be back Friday. But until then, be easy, people.